Podcast 13.8. Where is all the positivity over the 7-0 start and a 33-7 victory over Northwestern? Well, it's in the second half.
As we speak, there are hordes battling each other about Michigan's quarterback situation.
Indeed. And I feel like that they want to draw me into this argument that I don't want to be part of. It's like
you have a podcast. You're on a podcast. You have to be part of the argument.
I don't have to get in. I don't have to take sides.
Yes, you do. You already took sides.
No, I took it back.
There was
no sign on him.
I know, but no, you can't take it back. People are tweeting at me about it all the time now because of what you did. We'll just put a cyan circle on Cade McNown. Not Cade McNown.
Cade McNown.
God, if we had Cade McNown, we'd be in good shape. In the aftermath of a 33-7 victory.
Wasn't enough. I mean, that was... I don't know why people were nervous. How were you nervous?
Do you remember what being a Michigan fan is like?
Oh, of course I do. I also remember, like, you know what? I think people who didn't live in the Bo era do not remember always going into halftime, like, up 14-7 against Northwestern and then winning 38-7.
Well,
that's how Northwestern
doesn't always happen.
I think George Jewett brought. No, I'm going to save that for my hot take.
All right. Be careful with that. Before we get more into this, the MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or find their stuff at mgoblogstore.com. I mean, our stuff.
Nah. Our stuff, yeah.
Our stuff. There's a mysterious corn shirt that nobody has sent me yet. We would also like to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers Podcast, and Prentice 4M, which is where we are right now. All right, so you don't want to get into it, but I'm going to make you get into it.
I mean, I can get into it. I just don't want to take a side. I don't think McNamara is a bad quarterback. I think he's a medium quarterback.
He's like a 9-3 quarterback.
Yeah. Very good one. he is a pre-read. He's everything we said he was all season. He's a pre-snap read quarterback. His post-snap reads are not great. There was one which I think they set up for him, which was great in this game. He's really good when you spread it out, give him 5 wide, have him be able to see what the defense does. He's going to know what the defense is doing. They try to mess things with him. They try to screw with his head. He picked him out, and he knew exactly who to throw to. He's good at that.
I'm talking about, like, the 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6 conversions on, like, all hitches and option routes.
To the point where when it was 4th and 4, I was mad we weren't going, even when it was in our own zone, because I'm like, McNamara's going to make that throw, and like I'm confident when he drops back, especially against Northwestern, I'm confident he's going to make that throw. I don't know where this is coming
from. What's coming from? Like, there's a Pro Football Focus article out where he had like a 38 passing grade. And there's people in the game who are like tweeting out about how he's like 19 to 24. And I'm like, all right, that's true.
Yeah.
For 5 yards an attempt.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Like, and there were plenty of screens and stuff in there which don't really count for. You shouldn't even count as passes. They're more like long runs.
Well, there's one like one of those like touch pass and jet sweeps that shouldn't have been counted. But in any case.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are looking at what happened when Cade McNamara tried to throw farther than 5 yards downfield. So particularly there was like a post route that was way too deep.
There was one that Cornelius Johnson basically had to break up where if they've thrown it inside where he should have, that should have just, that could have been a touchdown easily.
Yeah, there were a lot of those. So there was the post
thing. Sainer still won. I do not hold against him. I think Sainer still stopped and then kind of jumped up in the air. Well,
there were a couple of different ones. So there's one where he throws it to Sainer still, and Sainer still is bracketed because it's a two-man route.
Yeah.
So
I don't hold that one against him either.
But no, because the other guy was open. And if it's a two-man route and the guy who's going long is bracketed, then just dump it down and get some yards.
Right.
So we've heard from Devin Gardner on TKA. We've heard from Al Bordas on TKA, who are describing a lot of misreads where there are shots that should be taken downfield that are not taken.
I mean, I have to speak right now for everyone in their car who just, like, stopped and screeched to the side of the road because you're referencing Al Bordas right here. But I agree with you. I just be careful, Pete. Like,
Al Bordas has access to all 22.
That's true. Just give people a heads up before you do that, because a lot of people drive and listen to this podcast.
In any case, so I'm kind of team skeptic, I guess. You can't say that, like, what we've seen from J.J. McCarthy is definitely, like, bench the starting quarterback of an undefeated team.
Right.
But I don't know, man. I feel like there's been a lot of people trying to talk about the wide receivers not doing their job. There's been a lot of people trying to talk about, you know, the fact that this is a good team that just needs to run the ball and you need a game manager. And I kind of feel like I disagree.
I see it. I see where the issue. The issue is you need a higher ceiling than Michigan has right now to beat Ohio State.
Right.
That's our problem.
Like, and this team can beat Penn State if Sean Clifford is kaput
and PJ Mustafa is kaput and like Illinois just like gouge them up the middle all day.
Yeah, and I feel like Michigan can probably beat Michigan State. I mean, not probably, but there's like they can win that game with Cade McNamara quarterback.
Yes.
And then you get to the Ohio State game and you're like, either he's going to play at a level that we really haven't seen from him all year, or there's just no way.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that the deep shots are not falling like they were earlier in the season is a huge...
Right, because we were like, oh, well, you know, this guy's got some issues, but at least he's hitting a lot of deep shots. And the last couple of games, I would say he's hit none. Like, Sainer still was able to lay out...
Yeah.
But that's a situation where he's open by yards, and like...
Well, would it feel better if he had a couple... Because, I mean, they flagged them, for the most part. There were a couple muggings that they missed, especially one in the end zone. But, like, if he'd gotten two or three touchdowns in this game on the plays where, like, the Northwestern guy was beat and just, like... You know, started grabbing. And,
Are you asking me if two more touchdowns would make me feel better? The answer is yes.
So, I mean, those were touchdowns, though. Like, he had a touchdown throw to Cornelius Johnson. The guy knows he's going to give up a touchdown, so he grabs his shirt and yanks him back.
No.
And they get the flag.
I don't think you could say that ball was definitely going to be on target if that doesn't happen. That felt like a very gray area throw, where it was not like, that's...
All right, and what about the mugging that they didn't call in the end zone? Like,
the fade?
I mean, that was right where you want it to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I already have that information.
I'm just saying, like, if they connected on those, he's not 5 yards per pass. And if you count, you know, the bare minimum that he could have, I think that if you count though the penalties that they even flagged as yards, then he like is like a 7 yard per pass, because there weren't a lot of passes again anyway.
Well, so. There's that.
Yeah.
And then there's just a lot of throws where you're just like, you need to make that. Like, there was that shot to Schoonmaker where they
went
had
way
like
too
a,
inside.
Yeah. Yeah. And, no, I think it was way too far outside. So he had inside.
Outside.
Leverage.
Yeah.
And just given what we've seen about his inconsistency, his lack of accuracy, and the fact that he's a total non-factor in the run game, I just feel like not great about the situation that we find ourselves in, mm-hmm. relative to the fact that, you know, I predict 7-5 midseason. I'm just weighing in on the controversy.
Yeah.
Where they didn't get JJ enough reps so that you could say either yes or no on JJ, and they're gonna roll with McNamara until they absolutely can't. And I feel like that's gonna put a ceiling on the season. Now, the alternative is a true freshman.
Right.
So,
and a very wild one at that.
So, like, yeah, I don't necessarily think that the coaches are making a mistake by sticking with McNamara, but I guess you could you'd have to file me as a hater.
Okay. Well, if you have to be in one category or the other.
Yeah.
But I think that if we're trying to give people, like, you know, the skinny on Michigan football, like the analysis on the quarterback, is we have a medium quarterback. And that is a guy who is not going to cause mistakes. He had one interceptable ball in this game where he, like, just...
Very interceptable.
Yeah. Where And that was a bad... I think it was a bad throw. Like, the guy was going to get open if he went deep. He just, like, shorted it and, like, brought it right back down to, like, where they... Watch the play again. If he turns it up deep where the tight end thinks he's going, I think it was to all. If he turns it up deep, then he actually can get open there. But he shot it low. He shot it like a comeback and, like, let the...
I think we must be talking about different plays.
It's the one where, like, there ends up being, like, two or three guys, because there's a cornerback who drops back into it.
Yeah, it's zone and it's thrown too late.
Yeah.
And so then there's a guy collapsing on it and almost picks it off. So,
right.
And that's something that we've seen with some frequency, too, that the ball's out late. Which is, I mean, this is his real first season as any sort of starter, so it's not a huge surprise. But, yeah.
Post-snap reads. But they will not... My initial sign was not really about the passing game, because we barely had seen the passing game. I'd be like, okay, you want me to tell you who this guy is? He's had 17 passes at this point in the season. It was based off of, number one, they didn't want to pass with him. Right, like he had a game like with Washington, where I guess he went to his coaches.
I think this sign was after.
It was after like game three or something.
A little bit deeper, but whatever.
Yeah,
we don't need to.
It wasn't after NIU, but it was after Rutgers, I think. But it was based off the problems with split zone, which they still were trying to run as their base.
Right,
and then like they have now a whole bunch of counters to split zone, other than the one thing that you're supposed to do if you're running split zone, which is zone read.
Right. Well, they're going. This is maybe a little bit too much, but they're going off the front side, away from the split zone block. So they're drawing eyes and expecting cutbacks, and then they're just going off the front, which is was fairly productive against Northwestern. But in any case, back to the quarterback stuff. And then McCarthy comes in and runs a couple of zone reads, and you're like, this guy is not just like an adequate South Carolina quarterback runner guy who will go get you 8 yards and then fall down. Like, he's breaking tackles.
He reminds me of Jim Harbaugh.
He's breaking tackles, and then he, as you mentioned, he's wild, so he has one very inaccurate pass, and then he throws kind of like a 20-yard out on a dime. And you're like, that's pretty good. And so it's a dilemma, because he's clearly the guy with more upside. Just the ability... I mean... The ability to combine this running game with legitimately mobile quarterback would be very appealing.
Yes.
So,
but will this coaching staff even do that? I mean, if their offense is based off of a no read zone read, like how much do we trust them to build like a whole package for that?
Well, I think they do have a package for it. So to me, it's just like, if we're not going to throw the ball in the red zone, like, let's put in JJ and block some guys with JJ.
That was so weird. They had the JJ drive, right? I think we're up 24-7 at that point. And, like, they have the JJ drive. And then they pull him for a 3rd-and-2. When it's like, that's where you want to have JJ.
Right. It's not like there's going to be any surprise that we're running the ball on 3rd-and-2.
Right. And then we ran a split zone, which, like, again, they're not respecting because McNamara is not going to pull the ball on those things.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mystery to me. But maybe we should actually talk about the good part.
Yeah.
So that we are not accused of being huge downers. Michigan, again, grinds a team on the ground for almost 300 yards. Spent most of the fourth quarter hoping they would breach that number, but they did not. And, you know, what leapt out the most to me is that Michigan has two running backs better than I think they've had in a long time. Particularly Corum, so there's that run on 3rd-and-5 where they're in the red zone.
Yeah.
And Corum gets presented with a dude right at the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
And he jump cuts outside that guy, accelerates into space, and then absolutely nukes a safety to get down to the one. Like, that is a huge swing play in this game, because if he doesn't make that juke, Michigan's probably kicking a field goal, and then on top of that, he's able to get past a safety and get down to the one. So, you know, that's a huge difference, being down at the 5 or 6 versus the one. And he's able to do that a couple more times in the game, where he gets a guy right to him.
And then
it's yeah. like, I don't care. And, you know, Chris Evans did this a little bit, but then Chris Evans had like this huge star-crossed career, but mm-hmm. his ability to make guys miss in tight spaces is, I dare say, Hart-esque.
I mean, you remember Hart against Northwestern, and it looked like Hart against Northwestern yeah. to the point where I was like going back yesterday and kind of looking at YouTubes and during halftime of Hart, just be like, just to make sure that my memory was correct and that it didn't like, you know, displace Hart with Corum.
Yeah. Well, and then Hassan Haskins has a 19-yard rugby scrum run where there's a lot of people who are chipping in. but for him to be able to stay on his feet, and then short yardage is like, at no point is he going to get stopped short and not gain yards after contact. And that is something that does happen to Corum. Corum yeah. will get hit, and then he'll be down.
Well, physics. I mean, right. yeah, at that point. But
Haskins, that does not happen to.
No, and it was great that they were talking about George Jewett, who was a great Hassan Haskins-like running back, while that play comes up. And he also has that one where he like, just spins out of things. And, like, that is Jewett-esque. And, like, what a tribute to that guy that, like, they're running 1890s football where the whole pile is just moving and moving and moving. It's like, thank you, Hassan. Like, that's what I needed out of this game.
Yeah, and so, you know, we have talked for years and years about what having to account for the quarterback in the ground game gets mm-hmm. you. It gets you wide open pastures. It makes it very difficult for people to insert free hitters at the line of scrimmage at your backs. Michigan does not have that.
Right.
And their backs are making it right.
To the point, the one with the jump cut you talked about, that was actually a no-read zone read. So the guy like comes in, and the guy he's jumping originally is the dude who's crashing on him, because that side is opening up because the guy was trying to crash on the running back. He hops outside of that dude, and then he's free down to the safety because that was a...
We're actually talking about different excellent play.
Okay. All right. I'm talking about a 3rd and 5 where Michigan ran a no-read zone read off the edge there. And that was, and he cut into the area that McNamara would have running
right.
into.
So he bounces that one out.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. This was different. So there's a safety inside.
Oh, yeah. That's the other one. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry. There's so many good play Corum runs. They all come down.
Right. And then he's a safety valve out of the backfield that's really mm-hmm. effective when he gets an open space. Just superior. Probably my favorite running back I've seen at Michigan. Since no.
Period.
That's my hot take.
Whoa. I mean, and he appears at the same time as Haskins, who like I don't even want to sell him short because he is the guy who like was tethering me to my Michigan fandom over the long winter before this season, and like he has not disappointed that at all. Like
no.
he is like if Hassan Haskins was our back, we'd be like, this guy is one of the best backs in America. He is paired with the best back in America, I think.
And Pro Football Focus is grading these guys out like that. So
yeah.
I think Corum is their number one back. At least he was going into this game. He's not going to drop after it.
Right.
And Haskins was, I think, in the top 15. So both these guys are lighting it up. Should be noted that on the offensive line, Michigan started 2 backup guards,
mm-hmm.
which went fine. There were a couple of hiccups here and there, but in terms of like, okay, we're down 2 starters on the offensive line. What's the impact? Like the worst thing that happened was Filiunga didn't pick up a safety blitz that led to that kind of monster sack on the drive.
Yeah, I want to talk about that one because I was talking with a former quarterback about that this morning, and he said that like the way they set the protection meant that they probably didn't see the safety coming down, so they didn't have the safety accounted for.
Yeah,
and the way you account for the safety there is the quarterback has to check him first. So McNamara, he was putting that on the quarter on McNamara for not looking to see if that safety was coming down, because if he was, he had a tight end releasing right into there and could have just popped past it to that guy.
So, yeah, he had open receivers, but he didn't have time to get it out.
Right, but that was like our. That, I mean, we almost never see protection breakdowns on this team, and when they do, they're in on the inside. But even if that wasn't Filiunga, that's saying something that you're like, you know, your fourth and your fifth guards can go in there and just be like,
yeah,
totally
I mean,
fine.
You can say that we're setting a protection, but in my opinion, when you have a defensive tackle who's lined up inside of you,
uh-huh.
and he starts slanting away from you, you need to like have your spidey sense go off at that point, because there's going to be someone coming for your gap, and you got to find out who it is and do something with them. So whenever you get whenever you get sucked out of the gap and you end up doubling a defensive tackle, you're going on my minus list. But that was one of very few like glaring errors for Michigan and their backup guards.
Yeah, the place where I saw it was Michigan, when they run power, they usually like to run their guards and kick out with the guards. And when you do that with Zinter, that guy just flies, right? And when you did it with Keegan, Keegan would be really good too because he's very agile. Neither one of these guys was doing... You know, Barnhart's agile, but he kind of mistargeted a couple times on those, especially on one of those traps where they, like, you know, they, it looks like they're pulling, and or look, they looks like split zone or something, and all of a sudden they hit the defensive tackle. He missed his guy on that one time, and then he just got kind of bowled over one time, and Filianga missed a guy too, just the guy kind of like dodged inside of him.
Well, yeah, but the starters will have things like that happen to them over the course of a game, right?
I very rarely see it with the starters, and then when you got down in the end zone, like, they would just run off Zinter all the time. So, like, missing the top end of those players is, I think, where they're missing things. Like, the the guards are fine. I would say they're, like, you know, even B-level. Like, I would take those guys over a lot of guards that Michigan started in the past.
Well...
But I don't think that they... I think there's a ceiling with Zinter that you don't have with Filianga.
Well, sure. I don't disagree with that. But the performance they were able to put out there against an admittedly not very good run defense, I thought was good. And then we... sort of briefly mentioned this earlier in the podcast, but they were using that split action as essentially a decoy, and then they would double, like play long double a guy on the front side.
Yeah.
And they would get away with it because the linebacker eyes were on the backside of the play because it's split zone. And
yeah.
That's so those like easy walk-in touchdowns from Haskins and Corum were that.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, this looks like split zone, but it's I don't know if it's technically duo because there was only one really long double.
I think it was their response, I thought, to what Wisconsin was doing to split zone. And Northwestern was definitely doing that. They were very much overplaying the edges.
Right, yeah.
And I understand that because Northwestern was getting killed on the edges. Like the scouting report, they read the same thing, right? Like, we're getting destroyed on the edges. Let's double up the edges. And then Michigan, the other thing that was really successful for them was that F insert where, like, they just take the tight end and have them go in and, like...
I just call that ISO insert because that's essentially... I mean, it's an ISO.
Yeah. I've just been labeling the player because Michigan likes to block with their wide receiver so much that, like, I started, like, saying F insert to, like, differentiate from Z insert when they were, like, sending Ronnie Bell in or whatnot originally in the season.
And anyway, so I'm getting too deep in the weeds. The ground game is adapting and evolving and taking the kind of responses that people have to what they're doing and making it work. But I think the thing that is making it work more than anything else is the fact that the running backs are so good. And the structure of the ground game is held back by the fact that they don't have a mobile quarterback at all.
Yeah. I think that that's going to play out in UFR. That we're going to have like another big running back plus game, and then the other guys. I think that Bastardus might grade out pretty well. One of the ways they changed things up this game is later in the – they started pulling Bastardus instead of the guards and having him do the kick out. And that was that big run by Haskins at the end. But I mean, that's what they are. And it's – the play action works well because of it. So it's dangerous enough that, you know – every
works
time
well
they did,
if you throw it to the right place.
Yes, but you know, even so, the every time they did play action, he had, you know, plenty of time back there to find somebody.
Yeah, the receivers didn't really have a whole lot of note because of aforementioned issues. I felt like you saw Eric All get more involved, and he's had some hands issues, but he made a couple of tough catches in this one where he got some contact immediately afterwards. And I'm like, you watch him in the pregame and it's like, this guy is just a different dude.
Yeah.
Like just the way he moves and what he does catching the ball. And it's been hard to see that not translate.
And the blocking, you know how hard it is to get like an old Bo guy or an old Car guy to admit that like a modern tight end is a good blocker. That happened this weekend.
Yeah.
So, yes. Andre Anthony, he was out there.
Yeah, he got most of the flanker snaps in yeah. the second half, which was interesting. Like, Baldwin was out there, and I don't know if he was messing up routes that got people mm-hmm. irritated or whatever, but that was a sort of a unexpected switch. He got another one of those end-arounds, and it yeah. looked like that was going to be
dead.
And yeah. he was able to outrun it and actually pick up 6 to 8 yards, which is impressive because he's not like an A.J. Henning slot bug guy. He's like, he's got legit size.
Yeah, but I mean, the book on him is that he was fast, right? Like, that, right. he was a very, he's going to be a downfield threat eventually. And yeah, and they Northwestern had scouted too. Like, they gave him space underneath, and that was his other catch there. So, you know, seeing him come around, that's just one more weapon. Roman Wilson was back, but he looked a little, I don't know, he didn't seem to be himself quite yet.
Yeah, one thing I want to say about the ground game is that Haskins and Corum combined for 42 carries,
mm-hmm.
230 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, 5.5 yards per carry. Their long was 24. So you don't get one of those, like, giant 75, 50-yard runs to distort stuff.
I was hoping you wouldn't say 75.
Well, we got to talk about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So the consistency with which Michigan was able to gash this team without getting, like, those comical Nebraska huge mm-hmm. touchdowns. And I think it's probable that Northwestern has put something together where their run fits aren't nearly as busted as right. they were early in the season. That happens.
So I think what happened was they had the new coordinator, and he mm-hmm. was from the NFL, and he was trying to run this system that didn't even work for the when he was with the Raiders or the who else was he with? I think it was the San Francisco was the other team he was with. Anyway, it's like a system where like you read the guy in front of you and do whatever he doesn't do. Like, so if your defensive lineman goes left, you go right. And the mm-hmm. linebacker goes right, the safety moves on. And like, they couldn't figure it out in the NFL, so I don't know why he thought he could bring it to the college. But like, that was blamed, this is according to Northwestern bloggers, obviously. That was blamed on what their problems were earlier, and I think that they used the bye week to try and just go back to what they've always done.
Yeah.
And all these guys were recruited to play cover two. Most of them are in their third or fourth year, so like, they'd had plenty of time in the old system that they were comfortable going back to it. And, you know, I think that's what we saw against them, that they were, you know, doubling the edges, but they looked like a halfway competent team, which says more about our running game too, that like, this was not Northwestern that got torn up by Nebraska because guys were not in their gaps. Guys were in their gaps, and then we were making them miss.
Well, also, our offense doesn't do nearly as good of a job as de-gapping the opposition as Nebraska is, right? So
that is true.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management.
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
Start off talking about the 75-yard run. Everybody's gonna be like, "You guys are such downers."
But that's the, like, the only
that's the only thing to talk about. Well, all right. So here's my theory on the 75-yard run. Defensive line doesn't do what they need to do, and then Michigan drops Josh Ross into an RPO protection zone and slides.
Colson.
Not Colson. They slide Hawkins down to replace on the linebacker level.
Yeah.
And Colson does not funnel to Hawkins.
Right.
He funnels to Ross, which is what he should be doing on most downs, but not this particular down. And then, therefore, Hawkins is out of position because the ball didn't get funneled to him. And the other safety, Moten, I don't know what he was doing.
He ran right into
a
tight end.
At a block.
Yeah,
and he was like, "I was just baffled."
Did he think that was the guy with the ball? Like, it was
very strange. Yeah. Yes, and so then the guy keeps running. So that's a freshman and a redshirt freshman, or technically a sophomore. I don't COVID whatever.
Yeah,
and then that was one of the few times in the game where Northwestern was able to actually get some big gaps in the line. So that happens. And then if two other errors hadn't happened, it would have been like a 10-yard run or something. And
right.
Then we would have been like, whatever.
Yeah. And they nearly got it down several times. Like, you know, Hinton got an arm on the guy and Ross, you know, got into his feet after 8 yards. Like, it was just everything that could go wrong. And because Hawkins was coming down the way he was, then we didn't have him, like, coming on the right angle. But Colson, I'm a little more mad about that, not just like the freshman thing, because it was a tackle who pulled from the other side. And he didn't pick that guy up until he was well around him and like didn't even attack him. So like you said, like when you see someone coming around from the backside and you're middle linebacker, very first thing you want to do is make sure he is not getting around you. And then, you know, if you can always funnel back inside. So like that was what made me more upset about it, because it was a puller.
Well, yeah, but I just, you know, funnel to help, right?
And
that normally where he was would have been funneling to Josh Ross, but because of the call Michigan had on,
right,
he got it backwards. And that's I think that's something that you might expect to happen. And that's fine, because it's a transition cost for a new defense that does have surprises like that built into it, which is obviously necessary. So you just got to, like, live with it.
Yeah. Well, the corollary of that is they have Colson doing things that I don't think you can do with Nakai Hill-Green, which is have him play like that cover three zone, the same zone on the other side that Dax Hill is playing. And that is a safety zone. And you need to have safety speed in order to be able to, like, get anything out there on the flat if you're playing in that curl flat zone. And he can do it. I mean, he got out there several times. One, I think it was the third time they tried to screen us, where for a moment, we're like, oh no, it's another third down screen, and they're going to get it. And
no, then, that was Ross. That was broke it up, yeah.
I could have sworn it was Coulson.
It was Ross, yeah.
Okay. No, Ross is the one who tagged the screen guy. Coulson was the guy, this is a third and six earlier, when they the guy caught it, and he's coming down the sideline, and Coulson busts through and all of a sudden runs him out of bounds. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah. That was an interesting switch. The other switch that came about was we saw Jamon Green benched for the most part for DJ Turner.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're nervous about that because last week Turner had a pretty appalling PI penalty.
And not the first time that's happened.
Right. And so here, like, his first involvement is getting a TFL on a screen that he reacted really quickly on. Uh-huh. He has the interception. He's subject to either the worst or second worst penalty in the history of college football, depending on your opinion of the Phantom Caron Higdon hold. I mean, you're going to grade that, and you're going to give him plus one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's on the guy until the guy rips through, like, rips him down to the ground. Yeah. And then
he gets this ridiculous flag.
That was a part of the game where there was several flags kind of going against us.
There was a significant chance that would have been another interception. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's stride for stride with these guys, and they are just Northwestern receivers. But those are sort of smallish slot types who you could see getting some separation. Didn't really happen. So really encouraging performance from him. Coulson was obviously more up and down. And then the rest of the defense is sort of what it is at this point. Like, there's not a whole lot of rotation, but those two guys are kind of breaking through.
They did have the screen bothered me again, just because, like, you know, it's happened to us enough times now that, like, it shouldn't take till the fourth quarter for somebody to just be tagging the screen guy.
Well, it didn't take till the fourth quarter. It just took, like, the third screen that they ran on third down in that drive. So Michigan was like, let's do something about this. So they did. And then Aiden Hutchinson was completely unblockable. I feel like the right tackle probably wasn't actually injured. He was just sick of it. He just was like on the ground after Hutchinson had blown by him again, and he's like, you know what? I got to do some self-care.
Playing of
this
that.
This is...
Well, the left tackle wasn't having any success against him either.
But they wanted him against that right tackle.
Yeah.
That was like... Good luck, buddy.
The inside outside, I don't remember if it was a sack or just like one of those where he just managed to throw it. Hilinski just threw it on the ground, you know, just to get rid of it kind of throws. But the one where he inside out, outside inside at him, and like the tackle.
That happened more than once.
Swiping at air, like, that doesn't even get like that hand to like touch him. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, he's on Pro Football Focus's Team of the Week again. I think this is the third straight week. And he actually got like at least half a sack to show for his efforts this time. And no holding calls, which is just like...
I was waiting for...
What are we doing here?
Well, I saw a few holds, but there were some really bad missed holds.
Yeah, there was one on Ross that was just
where, like they grabbed his collar when he was about to sack.
Yeah, and then...
And there was a running back who tackled Coulson at one point where, like, after he got by him. It was just... The backfield judges in the Big Ten are just not even watching anymore.
I just don't know how some of these aren't getting called. Like, there are a lot of people who are like, holding! And you're like, that's not holding. But when Hutchinson is all the way around you and you're grabbing a guy from behind, it's like, you got to call that.
Yeah. There's a difference between if the guy gets around and you still have your hand on his chest, you're allowed to keep your hand on his chest, right? That's not holding. If you have your arm around his neck and you're basically just a cape at this point,
right?
That's holding.
Yeah. And these guys are getting beat so bad that they're, like, trying to hold his waist.
Yeah.
They're like,
what
are we doing?
I wonder if Hutchinson is just, like, practicing with, like, weights around his waist at, like, 280 pounds. Like, whatever the poundage of the defensive end he's going against, just, like, that's practice.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Northwestern's talented slot receiver, Stephon Robinson, went out pretty early, so we didn't really get a whole lot of Dax Hill versus him matchup, but... Just given the way that their offense was running, I don't think that was really going to make much of a difference.
No, when they tried the edge, Michigan was usually there. They had a couple plays where they just kind of outside zoned all the way to the edge, and I was It was weird that Michigan didn't just set an edge, because I thought that's what our defense wants to do. But I think we just figured we could outrun these running backs if we replaced.
Well, I mean, there was one where Hutchinson got caught inside on one of those sweeps.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was like, no, sir, I'm going to get all the way through this. So he adapted, as one does. You know, there's not a whole lot to say, because they were so inept. But I do think that there were opportunities out there for someone who's a better quarterback to find guys, because Helinski had several throws where it's like, ooh, that guy's open, and then he just badly missed them.
Including another time when Green and Dax kind of ran into each other, instead of like the way that we're having them play man, where they just kind of run past each other instead of switching, is very weird to me. Like, I don't see very many teams, if you're getting that.
You mean like the bunch stuff?
Yeah. Like, they really are just trying to have their guys run through it, and they got picked again. And there is a way to run to do that. If you want to play that way, you're the cornerback who's up, the first one, the first level cornerback, has to get a jam, because you can't let that guy go and block your friend, right? So if they want to do that, he has to jam, and Green is not really that good of a jammer. He's a good cover one guy, but I don't see him like stopping a guy at the line. So I wish they would work on that, or maybe that's why Turner was in there. Maybe he's better at the switches. I don't know.
I mean, so the only things that they had success on were the 75-yard run, those screens, and then they had a few different plays where they were able to, like, sneak someone out, usually a running back, mm-hmm. into not quite wheels area, because the guy wasn't running flat out, but he'd, like, get 15 or 20 yards downfield and stop, like their first play, which was not actually a running back, but that sort of spot.
That's like a common issue. That's a common place to attack like a 3-4 defense, because sometimes you're having those ends drop in.
Mm.
So like one of the times they ran that, I looked at, I think on the very first play of the game, actually, it was like Ojabo, who was in that zone. So if you run a guy out to the flat, you know, the defensive end can get there. But, you know, Harrell or Ojabo are usually not going to be dropping back so far to
If you turn that up to, and then you've run off the deeper coverage.
Right,
So, a few issues here and there, but this is a team that gave up 7 points to Northwestern, largely because they did one thing very wrong. So I think we're going to let that slide. I'm going to take a break and talk about special teams. I don't think there was any real game theory, but we'll...
Fourth downs.
We'll talk about it.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next 5-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent, trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give Attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that, because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGoBlog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248 248-
682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Could be a message board talking about the Michigan quarterback situation.
Hot.
Beth, give me your hottest take.
I am not afraid of Michigan football anymore.
Oh, what? No.
Ooh.
We got to halftime and people are texting me and people are twittering and people around me are nervous and I'm like, what? What? Did we not like survive Wisconsin the same way? Like, yes, yeah, some things have gone wrong, but like this is fine. I felt zen. I felt like Michigan had things under control and they were going to take care of this, and I'm going into next week and I'm kind of feeling under, like, I could get hurt, but I'm not like I'm not feeling this like piece of this dread that's been on me since 2018, and it felt great.
You've crossed the Rubicon, so to speak.
You're like a boyfriend who texted his girlfriend, didn't receive a response for hours and hours, and you're like,
cool,
she'll get back to me.
Yeah. She'll get back to me.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just say, baby.
You're approaching the football that is being held by Lucy, and I cannot recommend this course.
I'm not like saying we're going to beat Ohio State or anything. I'm just not going to be hurt by it.
All right. There you go. That's very zen of you.
That is zen. That's super zen.
I feel like there should be a little fountain in the background, and we should be holding like smooth stones while Seth is talking.
Yeah, just everybody relax. Guys.
Well, let me break that mood immediately. Jason, give me your hottest take.
I think the missed bomb passes are just excuses to get our running backs more yards. They're design missed bombs. This is my theory. I think the missed bombs, like deep passes, are all a sort of smokescreen to get the safeties to play back a little bit more so that Blake Corum can juke everyone out of their jockstrap and so that Hassan Haskins can carry 14 people with him on their way to 1,000-yard rushing seasons. Look, we know it's almost weird. I get this feeling when I'm watching the game that I'm like, wait, we also could just be running it down their throat like every single play, and we would probably get the same score. The score would be the same. But I feel like they're trying these deep shots just to loosen up the juice a little bit. Is that crazy?
Yeah, then they're like, the quarterback's like, you know what? I'm just going to miss this one. That's the theory. Right?
Yeah, like you'd have to get Cade McNamara on board with this. I mean, I guess it's plausible,
the hot take is that it's on purpose. The slightly lukewarm version of that is that they don't care if they make those passes or not. That they would like to. It would be great, sure. But I think in essence they're like, well, we can try this because, you know, even if it's 2nd and 10, Hassan Haskins or Blake Corum, they're going to get 5 to 7 yards.
I think you just got the motive wrong. Short. I don't think it's getting the guys the yards. I think it's getting more time of possession. Like, they probably got to the end of the first half, and they were like, look at that clock. Is that a beautiful clock or what? I want that scoreboard framed right there. That is beautiful.
This is triggering to me. I can't hear any more of this.
Randy, give me your hottest take.
Next year, Andrell Anthony will be the top receiver on the team.
What?
I was watching. That is a hot take. I watched Andrell Anthony. I watched the speed with which he made up for being 6 yards back on that reverse. And I'm like, this kid's got some wheels. He went out and made that one catch. He blocked pretty well. Yeah, I mean, Seth, you can UFR. But I think this kid, for some reason, in my opinion, Cornelius Johnson has played well. He hasn't just stepped up and been that number one guy. I could see this kid being our number one receiver next year.
But isn't Ronnie Bell coming back next year?
Yeah, Ronnie Bell is going to come back.
I hope he comes back next year, but we don't know what he's going to be like on a rehab knee. I hope he's great. It would be wonderful to have him as great. But I'm saying this kid cannot be
kept off the field.
He's electric. He can't be kept off the field right now.
Even in his return that got called back because they had a number one on the field a few games back. I can't remember which game that was. He did rip one off.
Yeah,
he is pretty electric.
I just think this kid is something special. So, I mean, that's my hot take.
All right, here's mine. Blake Corum is the best running back I've ever seen at Michigan.
Yeah.
That's... Wow.
Now,
That
goes back to like Ty Wheatley. So that's
maybe
a bit of a hot take.
Can you?
Yeah, but
that's a hot one.
It is, but he really, I mean, that's a good take because, I mean, you think about
it. I'm going to say if Haskins wasn't there and it was only Blake Corum and he was as Charbonnet is doing this year, like he would get 2,000 yards. I think there's no question. He'd be at like 1300 by now.
I think he's doing, I agree with you, Brian. He's doing things that like we just haven't seen. Like Chris Perry was an awesome back, but he was just like a big guy who made a couple of moves. And the A train was a train. He was more Haskins-esque than not. What this guy, there were a couple of jukes he made on guys yesterday that were just, I mean, I've never even seen that before. It was like Lamar
Jackson. And he can take it to the house.
Yeah,
and he can take it to the house. He's like Denard
not,
in a
he's
running.
He's not back. A great pass protector. Wheatley was a great pass protector. Would you take this backfield over Wheatley and Bianca Batuka?
Wow, that's the hot take. I'd take this backfield over Wheatley and Bianca Batuka. That's a hot take to say that you would take this backfield. I don't know, man. I'll say this, you know, it's so funny because that we can't score in the red zone a lot of touchdowns because every time we need 2 or 3 yards in the middle of the field, I'm like Seth Zen-like and thinking, all right, Haskins is going to get it. 4th and 3. Yeah, whatever. He'll just run through and fall forward and get it. So I don't ever remember having that attitude towards our running backs in the past.
Well, yeah. I mean, they are a hot take. So,
yeah.
All right. If you would like us to continue this very silly segment, go subscribe to View from the Cheap Seats, the Sklar Brothers podcast, and then go see their shows last weekend. Oh, you can't do that anymore.
Can't do that anymore. you can't
Brian
do it anymore,
accepted.
But you can join our Patreon and watch our episodes of Cheaper Seats, which is us doing cheap seats with new weird things like cornhole and kabaddi, which is basically a playground game in India that they turn. Basically, it's tackle football on a tennis court indoors. It's good fun,
with
guys.
No ball. Oh.
With no ball.
No ball.
What?
With no ball. It's like the sport you play in your basement with your friends over just as an excuse to beat up your little brother.
All right. So Google Sklar's Patreon and then sign up.
Thank you.
Google Blog sent you and they will have money and they will be happy. And then you will get me to do this voice forever and ever and ever.
Also forever. Leave your hot takes in the reviews of their podcast.
Yes.
That's the best
yes.
place.
Leave your own hot takes in the reviews.
So fun to read. Please. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks to the Sklar's. Not a whole lot to talk about in terms of special teams.
Block the punt.
Block. Oh, yeah, that's right. We blocked the punt. I was like, we blocked the punt, and I was like, oh, that's right, we do that.
it was a very clean block too. Like there was no point where I was worried that he was like that Moten was going to actually hit the punter.
Johnson.
Was it Johnson?
It was Johnson.
It was Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay. On special teams, it messes me up because I just see the number.
Right. Yeah. It was Johnson, and okay. So it's one of those overloads where they send a guy through, and they've got three guys going through for everybody in the shield.
And then for whatever reason, Northwestern has not touched Cornelius Johnson. So he just gets a free run at the punt, which he takes advantage of. He doesn't do the Kalik Hudson and like block the punt so badly that he overruns it.
Yeah.
But Michigan hadn't had one of those in a while, and it's good to see that that's still in their wheelhouse. But, you know, Moody hits two or three, misses a 47-yarder. Brad Robbins has a 48-yard punt, a 48-yard punt, and a 47-yard punt. None of which had a meaningful return.
Right.
One actually did get a return, which is a bit of a surprise. But and then Northwestern did a really good job covering their punts, so Henning didn't really have an opportunity. He did let one bounce at like the 5 or 6, which mm-hmm. stuck. So Michigan was stuck on the shed of their own goal line early. But at that point, I think that's definitely a let it go kind of situation.
Yeah,
that deep.
I mean, I was sitting with the father of his backup, who was so there was a little bit of criticism going on right there, but other than people deeply invested in that, he tried to return when I thought that he probably should have just tried to fair catch because the guy was bearing down on him.
But if he gets that guy, he's got room to go.
Sure. But yeah, and he did get one return.
Yeah, he did get one where he had enough room to outrun a couple of guys and just. Yeah, a lot of people get caught there, and then mm-hmm. you're like, okay, the Northwestern guy's got an angle to slow this down, and then he doesn't.
So, yeah,
he's really got the wheels. and then game theory stuff, Michigan kicked a field goal on fourth and two.
With 2:36 left in the half. With two timeouts left. So I have a case for going and a case for not, which probably just means it's probably a 50-50 call. Like, the case for going is that, like, first of all, you should always go in that, and normally you go in that situation.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to leave them on the 2-yard line. But I think, like, if you do leave them on the 2-yard line, at the end of the half, they're just going to try to run out clock, right?
Yeah, but you've got two timeouts, so it's pretty likely you're going to get the ball back in good position and with enough time to do something.
Right, and the most likely result then is a field goal attempt, right? Like, you get the ball back on their 40 or their 50, and like you move the ball a couple yards, and then you have a field goal attempt. It's the longer one, but like still, it's still very likely that you're going to end up with a field goal attempt out of that situation with two timeouts. The other side of it is this game was starting to feel a little stupid, and if it continued to be stupid, the one thing that could really hurt you was if like Northwestern scored once, because I didn't feel like Northwestern was going to score twice. So like getting another, making it a 2-score lead. Was the difference. I mean, imagine they'd lose that and then they don't score, and it's like now we're 7-7 at halftime instead of 10-7, which feels different in this game because Northwestern was not moving the ball on us at all.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, to me, that's a go situation because you're going up against a really bad run defense.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a lot of success on the ground. They haven't really stopped you within 2 yards yet.
Except
in the game.
When you did... Well, not yet. We did some funny stuff later on next drive.
They
but,
did
yeah.
some, yeah, they went outside in places where it was just kind of like, you mean you have Hassan Haskins and you're at the 4. Like,
why
surely battering ahead 3 times is going to get it in. but, yeah, I mean, that to me, that's a go, but it's not like a huge deal. The other thing arguing against it is just variance, right? Like,
yeah.
So you're dominating this game. Do the low variance thing. Not a controversial situation, I think, just kind of a thing that happened.
Yeah, it changes it for me because I think that if you put them on the 2, they don't have a possession. So most likely you're just taking away one of their possessions. If you do kick off, then they do kind of have a chance with 2 minutes left to have a 2-minute drive. So like the best, I that would have definitely put me towards go. Where I didn't really have a question in the end, except for, like you said, like you want low variance. Like we're in a 1950s game at this point.
Yeah, we don't need to belabor
those
this.
Did end up being the winning points in their favor.
Let's talk to Jamie.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high-quality and low-latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute. They will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Jamie Mack at JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better than Indiana football after a night against Ohio State, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, that'll happen. But first, we're going to talk about the fact that overtime is no longer overtime after a certain point. So Illinois 20, Penn State 18 in what people are calling the NCAA's first 9 overtime game, but it's not 9 overtimes.
Right.
What would you call this?
A shootout?
Yeah, a bad shootout.
A very bad shootout. So there are two overtime periods now, and then starting in the third, you just try to exchange two-point conversions.
Right.
And so the first 10 of these are missed.
Yeah.
And then both teams get him in OT 8, and then in OT 9, Illinois gets 2 points, and Penn State does not, thus the 18-20 final score. Yep. And the story of this from the Penn State perspective is dual. Is that Sean Clifford did play, but did not cross the line of scrimmage on a run.
He had an opportunity to once, but then he declined and ran backwards again for a sack.
And they gave up something like 350 yards of rushing to Illinois. They were getting absolutely hammered after P.J. Mustipher went out. So there's like a lot of questions about how damaged is Clifford? Can he get healthy for this weekend against Ohio State? And like what – how much – of a downgrade is it with Mustipher out?
Yeah, we talked in the wake of the Iowa game how important the Clifford injury was to that outcome. We really did not discuss the fact that Mustipher went out with a season-ending injury in that game. And that, I mean, the drop-off there was huge. You know, I go back to games against Wisconsin and Auburn where I thought the Badgers and the Tigers really pushed the interior of Penn State's defense around and ran the ball pretty well. But every now and then, Mustipher would come up, you know, and make a play, and that would kind of stall things out. And, of course, the Penn State defense was able to just pin things back against Mertz going back to the opener. Without Mustipher, though, there just was nothing. Illinois running backs Chase Brown and Josh McCray, they had 50 carries in regulation. 12 of them went for 10 or more yards. Another 7 went for either 8 or 9. So that's 19 out of 50 carries in regulation that went for 8 or more yards.
And Illinois was running power, except whenever they got a 2nd and 2 or a 3rd and 2, they would just run a QB sneak right where PJ Mustipher used to be. I mean, it was like very direct. It was like, literally, this guy is missing. Because like I'd never seen that before, where a team was like averaging 2 or 3 yards with quarterback sneaks, and they could just get up there and run it whenever the heck they wanted to. And like they knew it was coming eventually, it was obvious.
Yeah. And you pointed out, I think the important fact on those quarterback sneaks is they weren't, you know, like 3rd and 1 or 3rd and inches. They were legitimate 3rd and 2s. And I think they did it once on a 2nd and 2.
Yeah, they did.
That was, it was just alarming to see. And, you know, we raved about Penn State's front 7 after the Iowa game, and one guy we talked about was Lucchetta. Mm-hmm. You know, well, his athleticism and his style of game is just rendered ineffective against against Illinois, and he was on the bench a lot. Just so, you know, he's been a revelation for them, and he couldn't play in this game too, and that was more coach's decision, style of play. But Illinois came out, and every play, it seemed like they had at least 7 offensive linemen out there. They'd add a tight end, sometimes 2. There were some formations where they had 9 guys across, and like they would start a drive with that. They'd be at 2nd and 1, and they'd go with that. Oh, we just got a rare chunk play. Well, let's line up in that again. And Penn State said afterwards that they hadn't seen a lot of those fronts, and nobody on the front 7 could get off a block all day.
Yeah,
and they just outnumbered him all day.
I mean, that what really did it for me is that they were running power, and they were like Michigan runs this like a lot of these same exact play. Like they had a whole lot of counter stuff. It was, you know, double down with the tackle on the or double down on that backside tackle. And I mean, I never imagined Mustipher was covering for this many issues. Their linebackers, I thought, are fine. I'm surprised they removed Lucchetta, and Barnes still looks fine to me, but. You know, they're similar to Michigan's linebackers, where like you don't want them eating blocks all the time. That's not what they're there for. And like you said, they're kind of athletic and light, and they can make a lot of plays if they're being taken care of. But like, I mean, Illinois gave us a blueprint.
Yeah, and there was no disguising what Illinois was going to do. I mean, for God's sakes, Art Sitkowski was their quarterback for almost all game. That's what struck me was that
they
were just running it. They were running it down. Yeah, 2 yards per attempt on 19 attempts.
Yep. I mean,
so
it's got to be major alarm bells for Penn State.
Yeah. So kind of away from the actual game and kind of bigger picture, there are some numbers I want to just mention. This is the 7th time under James Franklin that Penn State has lost at least two Big Ten games in a row. They are now 12-14 after a loss under James Franklin. They lost five Big Ten games in a row in 2020. They lost four Big Ten games in a row in 2014. They lost three Big Ten games in a row in 2015. And they lost two Big Ten games in a row, once in 2014, once in 2017, once in 2018, and now 2021 and counting, because they have to play in Columbus this coming Saturday. They are 8-9 in their last 17 Big Ten games. And I don't know if this record is going to get any better with Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State yet on this year's schedule. Ohio State and Michigan are among their first two Big Ten games next year. So, and they also play at Auburn. I know that's a non-conference game. By this time next year, we could have another Penn State team with three losses already and out of the Big Ten chase. So I don't really know where we are with this franchise. They might not really be ready to compete for a Big Ten title until this hotshot quarterback, that's coming in next year, if he lives up to expectations and if they can surround him with talent. Because I think they're going to be rebuilding this defense next year. I think they're going to be losing a lot of guys. I think Luketta, the Temple transfer, are going to turn pro. I don't think we'll see Mustafa again. They could be replacing three starters in the secondary.
Well, maybe James Franklin would be advised to try to get that USC job.
Yeah, right.
Urban doesn't beat him to it.
Yeah. All right, the other mildly competitive game of the week was Wisconsin 30, Purdue 13. This is another game in which the winning team has under 60 passing yards. Graham Mertz, 5 of 8, yeah. 52 yards. But the ground game comes alive. They get a 70-yard run and a 35-yard touchdown. This is tied at halftime. Purdue eventually kind of just sputters because they have no ground game at all, especially not against this team. And then their starting quarterback threw four interceptions.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the theme across the Big Ten. Four of the winners had a pair of 100-yard rushers, and none of those winners really got much in the way of quarterback or passing game production. You know, and this one, you know, you had Ches Malusi and you had Braylon Allen, who's been a revelation the last few weeks for Wisconsin, both go over the 100-yard mark. Purdue ended up with minus 13 yards rushing. They still only, if you take sacks out, they still were only 18 carries for 30 yards. Yeah, this was just the Wisconsin defense. You know, Chanel has been great. Sanborn was awesome as always. They have a big game coming up with Iowa. They could steal this Big Ten West.
Oh, no, not you too. Craig Ross has been all about Wisconsin taking the Big Ten West.
I mean, is it really a big leap? I mean, okay, they're playing the Iowa right now.
Can Northwestern come back and win it too? I mean,
no.
All those teams could any day beat one another. Illinois could jump up and bite any of these teams. Nebraska could certainly beat any of these teams. Like, I have no clue what's going to happen in the Big Ten West. Minnesota could win this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the winner is going to probably have at least two Big Ten losses. And, you know, for Wisconsin, they already have two.
And they'll have to play Ohio State
in the Big Ten title game.
Are we conceding that?
I'm just pointing out that they don't have Ohio State on the regular season schedule.
Okay. No, I was seeing if I could transition us to Ohio State, Indiana.
No, I'm going to do everything we can to not transition us to that game. But I mean, I think Wisconsin is going to beat Iowa this weekend. I mean, I think if you look at those two teams, the two best things right now going are the Chanel and Sanborn are playing lights out for Wisconsin, and they've found something with Allen, and Malusi is still running well. I mean, I can't see Spencer Petras doing anything against the Wisconsin defense. I can't see a running game that's fallen off the cliff doing anything against the Wisconsin defense. And that's going to set the Badgers up against a lighter November schedule to maybe steal this thing.
All right.
Yeah, well, I mean, at some point they're going to have to throw a ball in anger, but we'll see.
Yeah, or convert a third down. They went 1-for-11 yesterday against Purdue on third downs, and if you take out the Illinois game, they're less than 25% against Power 5 teams on third down. So, yeah.
That's not great. All right, Maryland 16, Minnesota 34, as We previously mentioned this was another game with 200-yard rushers and not a whole lot of passing through for the victor. No. And then the loser gets absolutely nothing on the ground. Minnesota is now 5-2. People are not talking about them as a Big Ten West contender.
Yeah. Right, Seth? Would you rather talk about them as a Big Ten West contender?
Yes, row the boat. I mean, they've got a senior quarterback. They can run the ball.
Their senior quarterback is like throwing four times a game.
12, which is 75% more than Graham Mertz threw.
Okay, hyperbole. It's 50% more.
50% more than Graham Mertz threw.
The Big Ten West is going to come down to which quarterback between Tanner Morgan, Spencer Petras, and Graham Mertz can be the least.
Big Ten! But
this was standard Minnesota ball. Mm-hmm. There was a stretch from the middle of the second quarter to the middle of the fourth quarter where they ran 39 plays to Maryland's 10, and that was just it right there. That was the game. It went from 17-10 to 34-10. You know, and Maryland just had to be looking at themselves like, "Hey, do we get the ball ever? What's going on here?" You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've just overwhelmed certain teams with their massive physicality. Daniel Falele is still manning that right tackle spot, and they just have this never-ending factory of running backs. The two guys who went over 100 yards, they're not Mo Ibrahim. They're not Mo Ibrahim's backup. They are true freshmen.
Right.
They're working in a very target-rich environment for running backs, and if you can't slow them down and you're relying on Talia Tungo-Vailoa to like pilot your team down the field without having a pratfall happen, you're just not going to catch up.
No. And you know, from a Minnesota perspective, they have Northwestern and Illinois in the next 2 weeks, and then they do play Iowa and Wisconsin along with Indiana down the stretch, but there's no reason why they can't win three of those games at least.
Yeah.
And end up with an eight and four season. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think they can beat Iowa or Wisconsin, but the team that lost to Bowling Green as a 30-point favorite is dangerously close to playing in an axe game with the Big Ten West on the line. Dangerously close.
All right, Ohio State 54, Indiana 7.
I can just start the music now if you want.
Indiana had a 75-yard touchdown drive on their first possession of the game, but at halftime they only had 40 total yards.
Yikes!
That's rough.
Yeah, that's
they did force the Buckeyes to punt the ball on the first possession of the third quarter. And that was the first time the Ohio State first string offense had punted since September 25th. So,
oh my God,
that's I'm going to wave a tiny little victory flag for that. Go Hoosiers.
They held Chris Olave to just 24 yards.
That's good work with down two corners.
Yeah. Can we be done before we start talking about Ohio State's like PFF scores?
And, sure, let's not talk about that. But just like how cooked is Indiana? Like when Michigan plays Indiana, are they gonna find a shell of a team that is no opposition at all?
I mean, quite possibly. I mean, it just seems like every week they have to play a great team, and they just keep getting pummeled. I just don't see it.
They played,
and you know, one thing we have to point out is that Jack Tuttle got hurt at the end of the first drive. So they were rotating in their third and fourth string quarterbacks, and things were just bad. So, I mean, they're a shell right now. I mean, they would have to improve in the next 2 weeks to be better than a shell.
These are like their fourth and fifth string quarterbacks. Cause their next guy was like the running dude, right? The guy out of Indianapolis is a basketball player.
McCauley.
Yeah. So then they were going to Grant Grammel, and I think they put in another guy. Like it was, they're
Donovan McCauley. Also, his name, he can't even spell his own name right.
No.
And he's a basketball player, so the world is healing.
So these are really like the fourth and fifth string guys if Tuttle can't go? Well, that's probably
pretty much.
All right. Well, I guess that's
not going to be good. They're going to just have to direct snap to Stephen Carr half the time, probably. But
well, we'll see if that works at all.
Ohio State's offense. I got this This is a tweet from Bill Conley. His Ohio State's offense is number one in his offensive S&P plus rankings by 4.5 points over the number two team. And just for perspective, in that tweet, he said that last year's Alabama team was number one over the number two team by 3.7 points.
So that's bad.
They have also scored 150 points on the last 156 plays that C.J. Stroud has taken at quarterback.
I want people to know that I have like a silence like cutter here.
What am I going to do with you? What was you guys telling me things that I don't want to hear?
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, we'll talk to you next week, Jamie. Hopefully there will be more interesting games, but
there
probably
should be.
Not.
Thank you for listening to the MGo Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook, and I'd rather be a game manager than a hater.